2 minutes each, and Les is going to be kicking off. Les, when you're ready.
Right, well, I've got much too much to say, so it's all going to be rather jumbled up and just going to come falling out. Sometime back, perhaps 15, 20 years, it was found that it was economically convenient to feed protein supplements to cattle. And these protein supplements, for reasons of cheapness, I understand, turned out to be the sort of broken down bodies of various dead creatures like sheep that had a disease called scrapie. And this was done. This was fed to these beef to help them grow faster. The result is that we now have, we have had over the past 10 years, an epidemic of something which hasn't existed before, as far as we know, called bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease. And it doesn't seem to exist in any large amounts anywhere else in the world, it's only in Britain. So presumably something particular about the way that the cattle feed supplements were formulated in Britain. Now, why should this not have been done? It's all very well to say it's horrible to think about feeding dead sheep to cows. I mean, it isn't very nice, really, when you think about it, but I don't think that's really the reason why it shouldn't have been done. The reason it shouldn't have been done is that there was this disease called scrapie, found in sheep. It was known to be extremely difficult to eradicate. It's not caused by a bacterium. It's not caused by a virus, it's caused by a little protein particle, and it's very, very difficult to get rid of that by any conventional means of sterilisation. So just because no one had ever seen a disease like scrapie in cows, it didn't mean that you'd never get one. So it was unwise to feed infected sheep to cows for that reason. Does that also make it unwise as far as humans are concerned? At the moment, all we can say is there's some circumstantial evidence that a disease like BSE has been caused to a small number of humans. The present number in Britain is about 12. It's not a very large number, but I might remind you that about 17 or 18 years ago, there was only about 12 people who had AIDS. So you might say that just because there's a small number now, it doesn't mean to say there's not going to be a large number later. However, I don't want to say that we're going to have an epidemic of CJD. We don't know that at the moment. But CJD does appear to be caused by the same sort of agent that causes scrapie. Scrapie is a sort of brain disease of sheep. BSE is a brain disease of cows. CJD is a brain disease of humans. There are some other diseases of humans also which affect the brain, which are also transmitted in a similar way, transmitted by these little protein particles. They're called prions. I don't know why, but I'll just give you that in case you want to know. If these prions can be transmitted to humans and can somehow get to the brain, then it's quite likely that you can get some sort of infection occurring. So there are several ifs in that sentence. So lots and lots of ifs. That doesn't make a certainty. So I don't want to alarm anyone. But I don't eat beef. The government response to the BSE epidemic is quite an interesting one. They appear to have been completely overwhelmed by complacency. They thought because scrapie had never infected humans in the past, scrapie has been known of for 200 years in sheep, people have been eating sheep for a long time, no one apparently had got anything from the sheep, so they were complacent in that they said it's never happened before, so it won't happen in the future. Ignoring the fact that if scrapie can get into cows, perhaps it's changed in some way, perhaps there's been a mutation, perhaps it's become more infective. Can I remind you that the AIDS virus presumably got into humans from an animal source. There may well have been a mutation in the virus which made it more infective, and it then managed to start spreading. So it could be the same sort of process happening with the BSE factor. So complacency was the order of the day to start with. It took the government 2 years to set up a committee to look at what to do about BSE. The committee then made several recommendations, such as compensating farmers for having infected cattle put down. The government decided not to compensate them fully. They decided to compensate them to the extent of 50%. So the farmer would be losing half the money on the cow. And you can imagine that some farmers may not be too scrupulous. They may think, well, I'm just going to send this cow to market. It looks a bit off to me. It might have BSE. I'm going to send it off to market for slaughter and sale before anyone notices there's anything wrong with it. In addition, we have the infected feed that was still being used. I'm sure that so many farmers use that old stocks of infected feed. And then the government introduced a ban on selected types of cattle offal, like things like parts of brain and spinal cord, which might be thought to possibly harbour the BSE agent, and introduced a ban on that. But it seems that it may not have been enforced thoroughly enough. So the bits of brain and spinal cord, which in fact were quite legitimately used until recently, things like pies and such like, these things may well still have got into the food chain, the human food chain, and so consequently people may well have been exposed to the BSE agent, certainly up to about 1989, and possibly since then. Now the government's just introduced a sort of selective slaughter policy for cows above a certain age. The trouble is that we don't know, and no one knows, and I don't know where they get this idea from. No one knows whether cows who don't show the symptoms of BSE can transmit the factor. So it may well be that cows are carrying the BSE prion, they may be transmitting it to each other, but because they're not suffering from overt illness, no one knows about it. So it could well be that it's all going to get through anyway. So the whole thing is just a complete farce, really. The only thing we can hope is that the new form of CJD isn't caused by BSE, and the whole thing is just a coincidence. That's all we can hope, really, because at the moment isn't this. Otherwise, things could well get extremely nasty. The new form of CJD, it affects mainly younger people, whereas the older form, which has already existed, affected older people. The average age, I think, is something like 40 for the... the average age is 27 for those who have been affected by the new form of CJD. It has different characteristics of infection. It has a different course of progression from the old type of CJD. So it's come from somewhere. That's why the spongiform encephalopathy advisory committee think that on the balance of probabilities there is a link with BSE. But the link hasn't been proven, but there's some sort of evidence there. Now it's been known for a long time that CJD can be transmitted between humans, because it's been transmitted in growth hormone treatment for people who haven't been able to grow properly. They've been given growth hormone taken from cadavers, people who died, and some of those people must have had CJD without being diagnosed. It's been transmitted, someone had electrodes put in their brain for treatment, and the electrodes have been previously used on someone else who had CJD, and the electrodes have been perfectly properly sterilised to get rid of all normal viruses and bacteria. But the CJD agent is not a normal virus or bacterium, so it managed to survive those quite quite stringent sterilisation method measures. I think someone's got it from having a corneal transplant as well. So it definitely is transmissible. So the question is, that's a direct form of transmission. You're putting it directly into someone's system that way. If you eat something, though, then it's got to go through the stomach. The stomach chops up proteins like prions. Perhaps it chops up the prions. Perhaps they're quite safe after that. But who can say? Perhaps there are, if you've got a cut in your mouth or something, perhaps the prions can get in through that. This is how a disease called Kuru used to be transmitted in New Guinea. It was known only in one tribe called the Fori people in New Guinea. And they used to carry out sort of certain funerary practices with their dead relatives, which involved sort of, I think it involved cleaning the skulls out sometime after death. It's quite likely, I mean, there was a story that it was cannibalism, but I think that's been discounted really. But it's quite likely that they were just sort of cleaning out these bones and things, and any cuts in their hands, the agent must have got into them. So the agent for those diseases appears to be capable of getting in through cuts and things. It can sort of leak into the body in some way and can cause disease. So who can say that this won't happen with the BSE agent? People eat beef and say chew on a little piece of bone and cut their gum or something. So it's possible. It's a perfectly plausible scenario that CJD can be caused by BSE. So I suppose my argument is we should never have been put in this position in the first place. Even if it's not caused by BSE, then we should never have been put in a position where cattle were infected with BSE. It can't be right to feed cattle food which makes them ill. I mean, there are thousands of cases of BSE in Britain. There's about 20 cases in France, there's about 100 cases in Switzerland, and the rest of the world hardly anything. So it's all happened, you know, 99.9% of the cases have happened in Britain. So it can't be right to do that. So I think we have to look at why the meat industry is sort of forced to do that. I think the reason they started using old sheep was to feed the cows was that fish meal became too expensive. There's a collapse of the fishing industry. So I mean, why they were feeding fish to cattle is another question. So that's something that perhaps people would like to sort of sound off about in discussion. I'll pass over to Dan now to talk about another aspect of the meat industry.
Okay, thanks. Okay, just wait till the microphones are in my direction. Right, well, I've come to talk to you tonight about McDonald's and the McLibel trial, which is providing a very close focus on the operations of McDonald's, who of course base their business on the sale of meat. The McLibel trial is a mammoth legal battle going on in the High Court at the moment. And on one side, you've got two campaigners who are representing themselves in court, called Helen Steele and Dave Morris. And then there's the mighty McDonald's, the $26 billion a year multinational corporation on the other side. So it's quite an amazing thing to be going on. And it's already the longest civil case in British history, and we're expecting it to go on till the end of this year. McDonald's are so worried about the way it's going for them and all the bad publicity that they've been receiving that they've twice flown members of their US board of directors to London to meet with Helen and Dave to try and negotiate a settlement to the whole thing. So that shows how worried they are by it all. Just to give a bit of background, this all came out of a leaflet that was produced by London Greenpeace in 1986. The idea was to highlight the issues surrounding the fast food chains, and they decided to focus on McDonald's as the most prominent and successful of the fast food companies, and produce a leaflet called "What's Wrong with McDonald's." Of course, McDonald's didn't like this leaflet being circulated, and they actually sent private investigators to meetings of the group to find out who was involved and to gather information. So, you know, these spies sort of followed people home to get their addresses and so on. And then with the information gathered from them, McDonald's sued Helen and Dave. But of course, at that time, what they expected was that Helen and Dave would back down because, you know, Helen and Dave didn't have any money, they were unemployed, and you can't get legal aid to defend libel. So they were faced with the option of, you know, representing themselves without any legal experience or apologising. But they decided that they were going to fight and stand by their principles. And by doing that, they've actually turned the tables really on the company because, you know, it completely wrong-footed McDonald's. And now McDonald's has found that with the trial going on, it's actually them that are on trial. You know, it's their operations that are being examined in minute detail. And as I said a bit earlier, they're finding it a pretty uncomfortable experience. Altogether, there's about 180 witnesses, which divides roughly half and half for each side. Just another aspect of it that I wanted to mention briefly, there is no jury. I mean, normally you get a jury in a libel action, but in this case, McDonald's argued, we felt completely falsely, that the issues would be too complex for ordinary members to understand. Of course, their main motive was that they felt that you know, if there was a jury, that Helen and Dave would be more likely to win. So, unfortunately, the judge agreed with them, and we haven't got a jury, just a single judge deciding or presiding over the whole thing. In fact, that decision to get rid of the jury caused Marcel Berlins, the sort of legal commentator, to say that he couldn't think of a case in which the legal cards had been so spectacularly stacked against one party. Well, what exactly did the leaflet say, and what are McDonald's complaining about? Well, one of the main aspects of it is nutrition. I mean, we've been hearing a bit today about BSE, which is obviously a very worrying thing, but in fact, a far greater cause of deaths in this country is heart disease and cancer. I think heart disease is the number one killer in this country, and really it's very much sort of swept under the carpet as to the role that diet plays in causing heart disease and cancer. The London Greenpeace leaflet said that a diet high in fat, sugar, animal products and salt, and low in fibre, vitamins and minerals, which describes an average McDonald's meal, is linked with cancer of the breast and bowel and heart disease. In fact, McDonald's said that this was the central and most defamatory allegation, which, if proven, would be the kiss of death for a fast food company. But what in fact happened was that the first witness to give evidence in this area was McDonald's own paid expert, a person called Dr. Sidney Arnott. And Dave Morris, one of the defendants, put the wording of the leaflet to him without telling him where it came from, and he said, what do you think of that? And this expert said, oh, well, I think that's a reasonable thing to say to members of the public. So immediately, McDonald's case had been completely destroyed by their own witness. McDonald's often promote their food as nutritious, and they say it can be eaten as part of a healthy, balanced diet. But Helen and Dave have actually been in a unique position to actually pin McDonald's down on what they mean by nutritious. And we had a sort of all of their executives saying that nutritious means that food which contains nutrients. And they then agreed that that can apply to all foods, including, you know, a packet of sweets. David Green, the head of marketing in the USA, said that he thinks Coca-Cola is nutritious because it provides water. And that's part of a balanced diet. So we can all go out and drink gallons of Coke knowing that it's perfectly good for us. But I think, you know, McDonald's have often in this case hung themselves by their own words, and on nutrition it's very much that case, because they disclosed an internal company memo, which was reporting on a high-level meeting between PR consultants and executives in the United States, where they were planning an advertising campaign based around the nutrition aspects. And in this memo, they say, we can't really address or defend nutrition. We don't sell nutrition, and people don't come to McDonald's for nutrition. So I think that says it all, really. Another aspect which sort of links in with the BSE crisis. BSE isn't actually an issue in the case, although Helen Day applied for it to be an issue in the case, because the leaflet talks about the risks of eating meat, although it doesn't mention BSE specifically. We have looked very much at food safety in general, and particularly, you know, food poisoning and how that comes about, bacteriological contamination, in other words. McDonald's claim, and they have it in fact in these McFat cards that they have in the stores, that every consignment of beef arriving at the processing meat plant is subject to a total of 40 quality control checks carried out by a team of qualified technologists. If a consignment should fail on any one check, it will be rejected by McDonald's. But in fact, of course, the reality is a bit different from that. When the raw beef consignments come in to the processing plant, they're microbiologically tested and categorized into satisfactory, passable, and unsatisfactory. But we had David Walker, who's the chairman of the processing company, saying that even if a meat consignment falls into the unsatisfactory character characterization, it wouldn't actually be rejected. It would still be used for McDonald's burgers. So, as I say, it's all propaganda again, really. The issue that we're looking at the moment is McDonald's connections with rainforest destruction, and of course one of the biggest causes of rainforest destruction is cattle ranching in the rainforest countries. So it's been a very interesting subject that we've been looking at since about February, just coming towards the end of it now. McDonald's, of course, claim that they're not involved in any way with rainforest destruction, and they say that they don't use beef which has been reared on recently deforested land. Recently being a very important word. I mean, Helen and Dave have been trying to pin them down for about 2.5 years on exactly what they mean by recently, and they've given various different definitions. But they've now decided on that they're going to stick with a definition that recently means from the time that they first decide to open stores in a country, which is normally between 6 and 18 months before they actually do open stores. So in other words, they could quite well, and they've admitted this, be using beef when they first open stores that has been raised on land deforested, you know, 18 months or a bit more before then, it's the focus has been on Costa Rica, Brazil, and Guatemala, but particularly on Brazil. So I could say a bit more about that, but I won't. The sort of quotes sheet that I handed around gives you a bit more information on that, and of course there's more stuff on the side there as well. I just sort of the last issue that I wanted to touch on is employment. The leaflet criticised the lousy conditions that McDonald's workers are forced to work under, the low pay paid by McDonald's, and McDonald's hostility to trade unions. And this was actually the longest section of the trial. It lasted from about April of last year through to February. let me just tell you a couple of things that McDonald's own executive said. They, of course, deny that they pay low pay. But McDonald's head of personnel in the late 1980s agreed that at that time, when there was a minimum wage set by the Wages Council, the starting rates of pay for crew members were either at that minimum wage or just a few pence above it. But they still deny that that's low pay, even though they couldn't be paying any low without it being illegal. Also, the same person, the head of personnel, said that the company isn't anti-union and that all staff have a right to join a union. But in fact, when he was questioned, he admitted that any McDonald's workers interested in union membership would not be allowed to collect subscriptions, put up notices, pass out any leaflets, to organise a meeting for staff to discuss conditions at the store on the premises, or to inform the union about conditions inside the stores, which would be deemed gross misconduct and as such a summary sackable offence. So that sort of says it all, really. We had, for Helen and Dave, there were about 30 ex-employees and trade unionists giving evidence from all around the world. The main focus with the ex-employees was on the Colchester branch. There were actually about 8 witnesses giving evidence from there, ranging all the way from crew members up to the store manager. So I think it was particularly a damning area of that part of the trial. And there was a lot of embarrassing stuff that came out. This was the headline in the Today newspaper after one of the witnesses from Colchester talked about how supervisors had ordered crew members and management to water down milkshake and ketchup to increase profit levels, and also they'd been forced to pour fat down drains, which had periodically caused the kitchens to get flooded with sewage. At which point, rather than shutting down the store, the crew members had been told to carry on working while the drains were unblocked and the sewage was mopped up. So that got quite a lot of wide coverage, as you can imagine. Well, just to round up, I've probably gone a bit over time already. You may be wondering what exactly are, you know, what's going to happen at the end of the day? What are the consequences of this whole thing? Well, in terms of the legal consequences, McDonald's are seeking damages and legal costs. And obviously, if they win, that could be a large amount of money that gets awarded against Helen and Dave. But Helen and Dave don't have any money, and McDonald's realise this. So even if they do get an order like that, you know, Helen and Dave, McDonald's know they won't be getting any money from them. I think the main thing that McDonald's are going for now is an injunction which would apply to Helen and Dave and say that if they handed out the leaflet or made similar criticisms again, they'd be in breach of the injunction and could be put in jail as a result. But I think really the important thing is that you know, McDonald's have already lost this case. Whatever the verdict is, you know, the motive for McDonald's suing was to stop the leaflet being handed out. And, you know, the leaflet is now getting handed out in ever greater numbers. There's been about 1.5 million copies of it handed out in this country alone. And now there's an internet site as well, where anyone who's got access to the internet can go and look at all the evidence, see the original leaflet. And this is available, of course, around the world. And thousands of people are pledging to hand out the leaflet, whatever the verdict, because, you know, they realise that it's true, and they don't necessarily have faith in our wonderful justice system. So I'll leave it at that, and, you know, I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Les. Okay, it's open now to questions, contributions, discussion.
Just to comment on on our guest here talking about BSE in cow disease. Actually, actually he didn't go far enough to talk about this problem. He didn't give it enough. He didn't stress on its political, economic or social implication. I mean, and he even sometimes talked. He sometimes even gave me the impression that he's not telling enough things. I mean, what I would like to say, I mean, this government knows that there is BIC and the cows are affected, and for a long time this one has been going on, and the government simply ignored that. What the government is after is the profit. They don't care about the health of the public. That's what they care. They care about the profit, even when the farmers ask for compensation, in my point of view, they should not be given any pence. They should not be given any pence. Why is that? Because the farmers are responsible for this disease. How can a cow turn it into against its nature and give it meat to eat? I mean, for that purpose, they just want the cow to become fat and to become fat as quick as possible. That is the idea behind this feeding. And it's really humiliating to read in British newspapers, they are acting against us because we are British. This is stupid. It's humiliating. It's crazy. I can't read a newspaper like this. I think Daily Express or Daily Mail, I forgot, and it's big headlines. They are against us because we are British. This is stupid. I think the EC have done against Britain, exactly, it's right, it's perfect, and they should go beyond that, because now the government have held a meeting a few weeks ago, and they try to find another market for their mad cow disease, for their meat, so because the European market is blocked, so they try to see if they can export it to India or China or something else. So it's really humiliating, and not only that, even the oppositions didn't emphasize on its danger, and they just there is lots of things going wrong on the subject. It wasn't given its merit, So it's again. It just comes to the conclusion that the Tories and this and the Tories don't care. They don't want to know about the results. The health of the public. But all they want is the profits. And the people should national unions of farmers should actually be criticized for asking for compensation or for not trying to. To act properly. That's it. Thank you.
Shruti.
Yeah. Both the BSE scare and the McLibel case, I think, illustrate very well how, as the last speaker said, profit is always put before people's well-being, people's lives. I mean, we all know if we work, when we have to fight every day to get higher wages, to fight over things like health and safety conditions. And just a sort of side question, I mean, has the health and safety executive been brought in at all to any McDonald's restaurants? This shows how far the whole thing goes. It goes to our very health, our very well-being, whether we live or die. And obviously that happens all over the world in all sorts of cases. And it's, I mean, things like what the McLibel people have done, I think, has been so important in raising the issue of how profit is the absolute all-ending thing for the ruling class above anything else, and all the guff they come out with all the time, the reports the government produce about how they're concerned about our health and everything else is just complete rubbish. They are not concerned. Anything they do is just a complete sop. Anything they've done over the BSE scare is just always a complete sop. But I think one of the important things that socialists need to do is ensure that the farm labourers get compensation for their jobs, because those are people who are on appalling wages, often below minimum wages, whose jobs are at risk. I'm not bothered about the farmers. Farms in this country tend to be very wealthy. I do get sick and tired. My partner works shifts, and sometimes I hear Farming Today on Radio 4 at 6 in the morning, seeping through my sleep. There's all these farmers talking about how hard up they are, the poor things, how much compensation they're going to get for all of this. But the farm labourers, as far as I'm aware, are getting nothing. And I think that in terms of the BSE business, I mean, there's so many other issues, as Les raised, about how the animals are treated cruelly, how they were fed stuff that wasn't, that they shouldn't have been fed at all. But I think one thing we need to take up is compensation for farm labourers.
Yeah, I'd like to ask both the speakers really about this question of, like, Les has illustrated the sort of the fact that they, like, cows have been transformed from being like grass eaters into cannibals, right? And then they produce meat which is lethal for people, right? And the speaker from McLibel has illustrated all the points about their profit motives. Can I ask a question about, like, an actual solution to all this? I mean, as far as I understand, there isn't really a large enough surface of the air, of the earth, really, is there, to grow healthy meat so as it could possibly be consumed at the levels that it's expected to be consumed in the advanced capitalist countries. Is that or is that not the case, right? I mean, for instance, I do like eating meat, right, and I like all the other sort of variants on meat, you know, pheasants, veal, anything that you can find. Wild Scottish salmon, whatever you name it, right? But I can't conceive of being I think people who are vegetarians because they think that, like, isn't it really bad the way animals are treated, are actually got something, I don't want to attack vegetarians, but they've got something wrong given the fact that, like, 800 million people on this planet don't have enough to eat. I think it's a slightly skewy thing to be, think it's the most important thing to get upset about, right? However, is it not a sort of economic fact that there actually is not enough land surface to raise healthy, like, cows and things like that to be eaten, right? And unless you can have either you can, like, continue to produce junk meat, which will poison people, right? Or you can have some kind of authoritarian vegetarianism, which will never happen because no one will ever support it, right? What sort of rational policy is there a way of dealing with this? Because, I mean, a big part of the problem is this sort of drive that's taken place since the basically since the middle of this century, right, to produce cheap meat, which has led to the development of all those forms of intensive farming, right, which produces meat that's rubbish, basically, and as the BSE crisis has revealed, is poisonous. Right. So what is the answer in terms of a world food policy? Because, like, most of the inhabitants of the world don't get the option of eating poisoned meat anyway, do they? You get rice or something similar and a few bits of vegetables on the side, right? Which is not, most people are malnourished. So what is a socialist policy in relation to the organisation of the world agriculture thing? Because any bit of food that you choose to identify, right, you can just find loads of examples of the destruction of natural resources, right down to, I mean, really simple things. I like fishing, right? Most people do not know this, right? There used to be a big game fishing used to take place off Scarborough in the 1920s, right? People don't know that. Huge tunny fish, this big, right? The ruling class of Britain used to go out, and instead of fishing for salmon in Scotland, they used to fish for tunny fish. And they catch the tunny fish, and the tunny fish had towed them around the North Sea for a couple of hours, and that was a great, great day out. The tunny fish have disappeared. The reason the tunny fish have disappeared is herrings have disappeared. The herrings have disappeared because they've been outfished, right? And large numbers of fish in the North Sea and the North Atlantic have just been outfished, so all the predators that used to live on them no longer exist in the same numbers in the same areas, right? There is a general ecological food crisis, right? What is the socialist solution to it? And is there one, short of a kind of vegetarianism for the simple point of view of necessity? What's the answer to it? Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've simply revealed my ignorance, but what is the answer to it all?
Tom? I only come here so it's Tom Rigby looks reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, on both sides, on the McLibel thing, I mean, I've never been able to understand the popularity of McDonald's because it tastes awful, it's uncomfortable, it's lousy service, and, you know, it's just not good. You know, it's not good food in the sense of either tasting good or being nutritious. Yeah, you know, they make a good living at it, obviously. They make millions. selling an image rather than selling food, selling a, you know, the McDonald's experience, selling pretending to be a Yank in the 50s. Want to be a Yank in the 50s is another question, but it, you know, it sells well. And on the continent, you know, it rates as, you know, a high price thing. You know, McDonald's in France or Germany is 5 or 6 times the price it is over here. And if people actually go and buy it, you know, they walk past good restaurants in France to buy a McDonald's. So, you know, there is a peculiar sort of form of fetishism involved in the entire operation. I mean, the thing that does strike me about the McDonald's campaign is that the people who ought to be digging in to assist are the trade unions, particularly the TMG, because it organises it in similar workplaces, and they're not doing the business. I mean, you know, the answer in court on the question of trade union organisation is simply a denial of the right to belong to a trade union. And the right to belong to a trade union includes the right to take part in trade union activities, and there are umpteen pieces of case law to establish this. So on that, and again, I mean, there's no 2-year limit for dismissal on trade union activities. So, you know, on that, the trade unions ought to be digging in and aren't. And, you know, and that is probably the place where the people here could be of most assistance, rather, you know, as well as sort of handing out leaflets and sort of slagging off McDonald's anyway, because the abolition of McDonald's is a step forward in the civilization of the world. There is a way they can be attacked, simply by recruiting trade unionists in their workplace, or given their peculiar organisation, their workplaces, getting jobs in there and then making an issue of it yourselves, and having to go on their dismissal on for membership on the trade union. I think, you know, there's a tactic to be pursued. With regard to Les, I always agree with Les on all the fundamentals, always have done. And I agree particularly with Les tonight as against Tom Rigby, because Les didn't say that, you know, necessarily if you eat BSE cattle you will catch CJD, nor did he say that, you know, industrial farming necessarily leads to eating poisoned meat. And I think, you know, the most important thing about Les's contribution is that he was actually honest about the level of general ignorance in the world on BSE. And it's important to keep a grip of that. It is actually not possible to have a cattle industry in which the cattle have a natural lifestyle, whatever that might mean. You know, we are dealing with the late 20th century. We are dealing with a situation where, in order to keep the cattle in any sort of numbers, they are fed on, when they are in the fields, on an almost 100% ryegrass diet. They're not wandering around nibbling a bit of this herb and a bit of that herb and all the rest of it to get a balanced diet like all the good cattle nutritionists recommend to all the good cattle. They're eating a monocultured diet. They're eating ryegrass and nothing else, and then they're taking it inside and they're eating ryegrass silage or possibly ryegrass hay. Because the stuff grows fast, it's reliable, it's hardy and all the rest of it. Now, because of that, it is necessary to supplement their diet with all the vitamins and minerals that we tell people they don't get when they eat McDonald's. You know, the same argument applies. The diet has got to be supplemented in order to breed healthy beasts. Now, where do you get the supplements from? Well, you either dig them out of the ground, you take them from other vegetable sources, or you take them from animal sources. Now, the logic of having a beef industry is that in order to provide affordable supplements, they went first to get the appropriate minerals from fish meal and then from shredded sheep. Now, whilst, you know, I mean, I don't think scrapie's a wonderful thing, as well as it's been around for 200 years. And it hasn't jumped a species within our knowledge in the 200 years until we got to the point where there is an apparent link, or at least there's a link in terms of there being shredded sheep in dietary supplements and cattle having BSE. Now again, as Les says, this is a peculiar British disease, this BSE. However, the use of these dietary supplements is not a peculiarly British institution. In fact, I don't know the figures because I'm not as avid a listener to the farming programmes as Trudy, but I'm willing to bet a few quid, if anyone wants to take me on, that they are used far more in Holland and Denmark than they are in the UK, because of the nature of the animal husbandry industries in Holland and Denmark. Right? I could be wrong, I'm open to evidence on it, but they're certainly used to the same extent. Right? So, there are holes in the argument of the link all the way along. Doesn't mean the stuff's safe. It's the most likely cause at the moment. There was no evidence of scrapie jumping species. There is some indication that BSE might be jumping species with the new strain of CJD. Providing you don't live in Ashford, there doesn't seem to be any sign of any clustering on this. And the so-called cluster in Ashford consists of three cases, which wouldn't rate a cluster. So the whole thing is very vague all down the line. And I think we've got to accept that, you know, there's a possible link here, there's a possible link there, there's a possible link there. There are no clear links. And the other thing is this peculiar thing about not eating beef. It's a sad thing, but I think it's definite proof that God is on the other side, so we shouldn't believe in the bugger. That if you buy the expensive cuts, you're buying safe beef. Because there are no cases of BSE recorded in Aberdeen Angus, in Red Devons, or in the major beef breeds. Now this is because the supplements are used far more with dairy cattle because of the necessity not of getting them to put on weight and build muscle, but the necessity of feeding them in order to produce large quantities of milk, and the fact that they have a longer working life. So there's all sorts of problems with it, which brings us around to the question of, you know, how do we deal with it? Now, Tom's right, you know, the world will need feeding. It's neither, you know, a good thing that we consider going back to some sort of primitive sort of life where we all scrape a living from a few nettles in the hedgerow, nor is it a possible thing. There's got to be a possibility of producing large amounts of fairly cheap food for the human race. This should be done as safely as we can. I don't think there's any point in slagging off the farmers who were basically, you know, in their own sweet capitalist way, acting on the best information available at the time and getting on with it. People who carried on feeding this stuff afterwards are another question. But, you know, basically, Les, where do we go from here? Yeah.
I was wondering, do the speakers want to come back on anything, because there have been lots of things raised here, like, for example, is there something intrinsically irrational about trying to grow beef to feed people? Is it just the way that capitalists do it, for example? Is it a health and safety issue, etc., etc.? Is there anything the speakers want to come back on now before I ask other contributions?
I'd love to come back on a few things.
Dan, quickly.
Well, I wanted to come back on a couple of points. There's a lot of points raised there. I mean, firstly on BSE, what has been talked about BSE is just the tip of the iceberg, and BSE itself is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, for example, BSE, is it conferred by blood? If you go and give blood in the United States now, the Red Cross give you a form, and on that form is a question. Do you know what CJD is? Have you or any member of your family ever had CJD? Now, why are they asking that question? Because they consider that CJD, I mean BSE or the prion or whatever, may be transferred by blood. And if so, you know, there's blood in milk, there's blood in meat, you know, it's going to be transferred a lot more easily than we're thinking at the moment. The other thing is
But as I said, BSE itself is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've got bovine AIDS, we've got bovine leukemia, we've got hormone residues, pesticide residues in meat, antibiotic residues. We've got the whole question, as I was talking about earlier, of heart disease and cancer, which is, you know, heart disease is the biggest killer in this country. It's caused by, you know, saturated fat and cholesterol, as well, you know, in dietary terms. So, I mean, BSE is a result, really, of the intensivization of agriculture. Because you're putting cattle in intensive farming structures, and you're feeding them whatever you can buy them to buy for them to fatten them up as quickly as possible. I mean, cattle are fed all sorts of things. They're fed sawdust. They're fed, you know, all sorts of crap, you know, just to provide bulk and to whatever the cheapest source is, cows will do it. I mean, you were talking about it being a supplement. It's not actually a supplement because cows are herbivores. They don't, you know, by their natural being, they don't eat meat products. They eat grass. I mean, that is and plant materials. They don't eat meat. So the reason why they're being given this stuff is because of the intensivization. So that brings me on to your sort of question, which led on to some things you said. What's the solution to this all? Well, my idea of the solution is organic, sustainable, plant-based agriculture. And I'll give you two quick reasons for that. In terms of human beings, the reason why that is good for us is because obviously organic means without all the chemicals, and the chemicals are very, all the pesticide residues and stuff, you know, is a whole big issue that hasn't really been become a major concern yet, but I'm sure that it's causing a lot of problems. Also, as you know, our system is not designed to eat large quantities of meat. That was why before 1902 there was hardly any heart disease in this country. And if you look at, for example, you know, countries like China, where very little meat is ate, and Japan before 1950, they had minuscule rates of heart disease. But as soon as the Japanese started eating large quantities of beef and other meat, their heart disease rates shot up. Why is this? Because the human body isn't designed for eating that amount of meat products. I mean, we have long intestines, which is a herbivorous type of intestine. If you look at any carnivore animal, they have very short intestines. So that's one point. And the other point is the environmental.
Save something for the end.
All right. Can I just make one quick point and then I'll finish. The environmental question. If you grow grain, feed it to cows, and then eat the cows, it's very much less inefficient than if you grow grain or plants and eat the plants. So we can feed the world if we have a plant-based diet. If we're on a meat-based diet, we have a very big problem in feeding the world. So, sorry, that's what I wanted to say.
Yeah, I very much agree. I think the natural human diet contains some meat, but not as much as we tend to eat nowadays. Well, I don't eat it anyway, but the solution to the meat problem is probably some sort of cultural and change, and some sort of public health education change, which makes us want to see meat more as a luxury, something which should be produced healthily, and not just something we go and have just because we're hungry. As far as supplements to cattle feed is concerned, I understand that they used to feed them something called cattle cake, which I believe is rather a sort of wholesome thing with nuts and things like that. So wholesome. so wholesome that I understand the farmers used to eat it themselves. But, now they started putting the animal material in. As has been pointed out, cattle aren't naturally carnivores, even though they can digest protein. I imagine that their intestines are not really competent to the task of digesting these proteins properly, and that's how you manage to get some of these parasites, disease organisms from one animal into another, just by feeding that animal to a herbivore. I do listen to some of these farming programs, and I understand in Sweden they don't use the sort of meat feed supplements. I think they've decided to go for a sort of higher cost, higher quality meat industry. Of course, some might turn around and say that McDonald's are very popular in Sweden. I don't know. I will just mention that these infected cattle feed supplements have also been fed to pigs and chickens, and pigs have been shown to be susceptible to BSE. They've been infected sort of artificially. It could well be that they are also being infected, but because they are slaughtered after a fairly short period of life, they never get to display the symptoms of that. So that's something else to think about.
Right, Mick and Danny Lane.
I think he just serves all right. Friends of the I really do think it's no surprise, right, that if farming techniques as they are, if you go pumping animals full of chemicals, full of all sorts of artificial additives and so on, and then grind them up and you kill them and feed them to each other and stuff, you're going to do something that's not, and not just because it's not natural, you do all sorts of things that are unnatural that aren't necessarily unhealthy, but if you do that into the food chain, something similar or later is bound to snap. You're going to create a problem. But I think Tom sort of said that there's a lack of land perhaps to feed everyone, and I think eventually there would be a lack of land, but at the moment I don't think that's the problem. The farm industry does not pump that number of steroids and chemicals and ground up cow's brains and stuff to livestock because there's a lack of land. They do because if you do it that way, you make a hell of a lot more money. And I think I think everyone agrees that's sort of the central sort of thing of what's going wrong here. You said that the expensive meat is good and that doesn't seem to have BSE in it. Now I agree with that, that seems to be scientifically proven. I'm not quite convinced by the argument that that's because God likes rich people. I happen to think it's probably because Aberdeen Angus and so on. But these animals are reared in, have a lot more space, their foodstuffs they're fed on, they're not fed on the same sort of foodstuffs that the big herds are fed on, and there's not quite the same intensive farming methods, the same use of drugs and so on. That seems to be why they're not getting the BSE. There's quite clearly something to do with the way that the meat is being produced in the big herds is what's causing it. And it's true that the transfer is not concretely proved. However, there seems to be a hell of a lot of evidence that for whichever reason, BSE is being transferred, and it seems to be jumping the species. And whether that's down to feeding crushed up animals' brains to other animals, or whether it's because of the drugs that are being used, some people... I was watching something on the telly, someone or other was suggesting it's more to do with the steroids and stuff that's been used. Whichever it is the cause, that seems to be happening, and research should be being done into what is causing that. What I find worrying about the whole situation and debate at the moment is you read the papers and you watch what's coming out from the government statements, and criminally from the Labour Party and so on, is they're saying we've got to restore consumer confidence. Bollocks. Well, why should we restore consumer confidence in something that could kill people? That's not the issue at all. The issue is that it's public safety. The issue is that people are being put at risk. It might be a small risk, but it's not quite clear. We don't know. The incubation period seems to be quite large, etc. There is, however, a very serious risk being posed by this. And the central issue has to be, how do we best protect the public? And if we organise society in a rational way, that would be the central issue. Because we organise society around profit, the whole issue about people being safe and people eating food that benefits them rather than eating food that kills them has been swept under the carpet. And the big issue that comes forward is restoring consumer confidence. What an indictment really on capitalism. Just to finish up, I think what BSE shows is the whole way the solution, like people have tried to look at some sort of solution. I don't know what the solution is, but I think I don't agree with the stuff to say that the use of chemicals and so on is unnatural, therefore it's therefore bad. I think, however, what BSE does show us is it's risky and it needs to be, we need to test all these things properly. However, because that costs a lot of money, so that's not happening. We need, but we should be making sure that all the chemicals and attempts to improve productivity in farming are very, very thoroughly tested, because if you're screwing up food, then you're creating a huge problem. There's stuff again about the diet in the West and the amount of food. The diet we eat in the West is not natural, it's not good for us. However, it's geared around profit, and you make a hell of a lot of cash from grinding up crappy meat and flog it in a bun at McDonald's for £2 on, for what costs probably £10 to produce. Make a hell of a lot more money from burgers and from crisps and processed rubbish that we eat than you do from lentils and rice and nice stuff like that that's really good for you, where it might taste a bit boring. And I'm a vegetarian, I survive on boring food. But unless, of course, you get ripped off in lots of health shops. But if we, I don't think that actually, although Tom might like eating every beast that's ever walked the earth, and as many beasts as he can, I don't think there's a particularly natural consumption due to human beings' taste. I think it's a lot more about the world we live in, about the market, and about the organisation of society, that you make a lot of profit from those foods, and that's what's advertised, that's what's pushed us. And perhaps in a more rational society, that sort of dietary pattern wouldn't exist.
I agree with quite a bit of what Mick's just said. I think like people have stressed like the importance of people having a healthy diet, and how the majority of people, majority of working class people, are basically expected to eat shit. I mean, like, one of the good things I think that's come out of the BSE crisis is that good meat has come down in price. It means that those of us who don't usually eat that sort of meat or can afford it for once, which is what we've been doing. But I mean, I think that like people talk about, like we've talked about the sort of the food in McDonald's and why do people eat it when it's so crap. But the whole working class people, the diet that you can afford to buy, the food that you can afford to buy is generally unhealthy. Like if you're ill and stuff and you go to your doctor and the doctor says, oh, you should eat more healthy food, you should eat more fruit, fresh vegetables, good quality meat, all this sort of stuff when you're ill. Like for the majority of people, that isn't your choice on the money that you've got to survive on. And I think that it is very easy to come across when you're discussing these sort of things about preaching to people about how, you know, this is the healthy way to eat. All we need is a sort of change in sort of cultural attitudes towards healthy eating, and things will be better. I mean, we are talking about a lot more than that. We are talking about the money that people have got to survive on, and all the other things that go with that. We're talking about, like people have already said, a system that's based on production of food for profit, and that's the thing that means that that to be able to produce things as cheaply as possible for mass consumption without any care about what goes into it. And like people have said about, you know, how unhealthy meat is. Well, I mean, like all sort of pesticides and stuff like that they're using sort of grown vegetables and all that sort of stuff. Again, there's not under capitalism, the sort of food you're expected to eat is you're expected to eat a lot of things that are extremely unhealthy because the nature of the way production is organised. And I think people are right in what they've said about, you know, what is needed is to sort of logically change the way things are produced. But that does mean a fundamental change in society and the basis of society. And I think that's the only possible solution to these things. And, you know, you can talk about, you know, like this sort of campaign to do the McLibel case that has raised all the issues about problems of multinational company like McDonald's. But it's true of all the others too. And in order to, like, completely eradicate that sort of production for profit, the things that do drive down prices and make things unhealthy for people, is you've got to be looking at complete transformation. Talking about complete transformation of the system, the way society is organised. I don't think you can get away from that. There are some changes that can be made under capitalism, but ultimately, for working class people to have a decent diet, you're talking about complete transformation of society.
Janine, then, you'll vote. A few points. First of all, I think working class people not being able to follow healthy diets, where it just isn't just an issue of money, because actually these McDonald's burgers are incredibly expensive as well as being very nice, very bad for you. It's also an issue of having the time and having the resources to spend time buying healthy food from a roadside that isn't covered in exhaust fumes and preparing it in a nice kitchen and having the time and the opportunity to educate yourself about what constitutes a healthy diet in the first place. Somebody asked me last week whether I'd stopped eating beef because of this BSE panic, and I haven't. And I thought about why. And I realised that it would actually be really quite irrational of me to stop eating beef on the basis of a 1 in a million chance of developing CJD, and then go down the pub and drink 10 pints of alcohol and smoke myself stupid all evening. And yet, that is actually what quite a lot of people have done. And I'm not sure what the logical conclusion of that is, apart from the fact that my lifestyle... don't do any of that, and my lifestyle isn't healthy enough. But I think perhaps one of the reasons why people have reacted in such a panic whilst carrying on pursuing other things that are much more unhealthy and are much more actual real...